everybody. Welcome to the ANN After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Hey.
He's back home.
Yes.
So we can record as per usual. We tried to do it remotely, and tech just wasn't cooperating, so we had to reschedule for Thursday.
Our Wi-Fi strikes again.
So thanks, everyone, for coming on out. We are going to be talking about The Elusive Samurai, which James is covering over at Anime News Network. He's doing the daily streaming reviews for that one.
Heck yeah.
And Yatagarasu came back for a single episode before going on break again for 3 weeks for the Olympics. So we're going to talk about that one episode.
I mean, at least it means that we won't have to say goodbye to the show as soon.
I guess. I mean, I hope that they anticipated the Olympics coverage, and so everything.
You say you get a lot of notice for the Olympics.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like 8 years.
They're not a surprise. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, oh no,
the Olympics. I personally was surprised. Didn't know or forgot that they were happening. At all, but they're in Paris this year. Yeah. So
well, but we also don't like literally work in the broadcast industry where, you know, time slots are probably a thought on everyone's brain every single day.
That's true. Yeah. We're not like sending people to Paris to cover the athletes or anything like that. So yeah. So Yatagarasu, we've got one episode. Just enough to give us a little bit more about some of the cliffhangers before we switched arcs. And Elusive Samurai is new, and I have the page open for it to help me remember everyone's names, because he picks up an entourage pretty quick, actually, in that show. And that show still is a little... I'm enjoying it, but it is definitely, like, tonally pretty weird as far as, like, a historical comedy slash... drama. There's a lot of beheadings in The Elusive Samurai. I would say at least two an episode, if
most
not
of them
more.
Committed by or against children.
Yeah. Yes. There was quite a bit of that as well. So before we get to our anime review content, one bit of news. This is coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, which is happening right now. Viz Media announced during their panel on Thursday that the manga Rooster Fighter will be getting an anime series. This is animated by Sanzigen, I think that's how you say it, right? And directed by Daisuke Suzuki, who did D4DJ All Mix. So shout out to Christopher Ferris, who I think reviewed that entire franchise for us. But it's about a rooster that, you know, fights. Right. So I thought we could show the teaser trailer. I did watch this one in advance and thought it looked pretty dang good. So let me share this with y'all.
I'm not gonna go all the way for fear of getting us in trouble with the YouTube gods, but let me just say, real missed opportunity with the title. That's all I've gotta say.
So having already seen this, I promise you that there is at least an intentional nod to that.
Good.
Yeah. We don't need...
You only get so many opportunities to make that joke.
Yeah.
You got to take advantage of them when you can.
Yeah.
So, especially in an anime where the word wouldn't even be censored, probably.
Well, it's not in this video, so...
Yeah. Oh, it's so cute.
Yeah, but there are literally demons fighting or on the streets, I guess. And this poor little chick.
What's that little cartoon chicken?
Yeah. One brave rooster stands against all evil.
It's like Poyo from Chew.
Yeah.
I read that comic, but he's also a demon fighting chicken.
Is he really?
Well, I don't know if they fight demons, but he fights evil.
So is there any actual dialogue?
I hope not.
You hope the main character just literally like clucks all the way through this.
Yeah. And any human characters just have to act like they know exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
Like Helper from Adventure Brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I am 100% about this show.
This is also reminding me, there was I don't think it was Cup Noodle, but it was something similar, where they teamed up with Devilman for a commercial, and they did a whole website that like talked about the occult and everything, And
is it Pride Devil Man or just regular Go Nagai Devil Man?
I think just regular Go Nagai Devil Man. So and good. Wow, look at that epic chicken.
I'm so happy about this.
Yeah.
This is I'm deeply excited for the show. Yeah. I want it to.
Here is
the
yeah. So that's Rooster Fighter. We don't have a release date yet. Let me double check ANN's article to see if there was a release window.
And the CG in it looks really good.
Yeah, it does.
Properly cel shaded and
Sansigen has done good CG work on. It's been like kind of idle stuff before this, but it looks good.
I mean, I gotta hand it to the idle anime. They've really, you know, they've been advancing the technology quite a bit. Just to
make those 3D CG anime is getting better only on the backs of hardworking anime idols. So
and Studio Orange,
yeah. So. Yeah, no release date for that yet, but Viz is represented for the anime's worldwide streaming, and it'll it's going to air on Adult Swim.
Good.
But it'll also stream on other places, probably at least Max, since they seem to get all the Adult Swim content. So,
that's Rooster Fighter. I would accept one voice actor then for the Rooster. Is it Dana Schneider, the guy who voices Master Shake in Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
Oh, yeah.
I want him to be the Rooster, if he has any voice at all.
I actually like your idea that there's no voice at all. So Nick in the chat also points out that the same studio is doing the Guilty Gear anime, so if you kind of like what you saw there, Guilty Gear fans, look for more of that in the Guilty Gear anime when that premieres. So
Guilty Gear is one of those franchises that I always feel like I'm someday gonna develop a very expensive hyper fixation for one summer.
I can see
to like play all of them, and
I can see that for you. Have you finished watching all the Shin-Chan movies yet?
No. There's so goddamn many of them, but they are very—they're very adorable and entertaining. So,
how many have you gotten through?
Like three. So. Okay.
Sorry, I feel like I just called you out on that.
Like three. But you know what? The beautiful thing, though, with hyperfixation is it comes—it's a cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, they will be there now in my little memory lockbox forever on days where I get bored and have other more important things to do.
Didn't you specifically want to watch one movie, but then told yourself you had to watch all the other ones first to get there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the movie you wanted to watch, wasn't it like 20 something?
Maybe. It might be like number 12.
Oh, okay.
It's a ways in. And, you know, that first movie, again, very cute, very good, but also made for 9-year-olds and lower. So I got my work cut out for me. But again, I eventually got through the Yakuza games for the most part. And so I will.
It's funny that you bring that up, because now that my son is, you know, maybe starting to get over Elden Ring, which is what his hyperfixation was for a bit there. Mm-hmm. He told me he was going to get Sekiro. But then he asked me if he should get Sekiro or if he should get into the Yakuza franchise.
Ah.
And I was like, kid, you should do the Yakuza franchise.
One of them is going to make you destroy your controller, and the other one is going to make you some best friends for life. So.
Yeah. I don't know if they're still, they had a sale for quite a while where you could get like almost the entire franchise for like really cheap.
Honestly. I mean, these days you can get the first six and their little 2-pack collections for like, almost every few months they're on sale for like $10 a pop. So
oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's only the newer ones that they really keep the price up for. Infinite Wealth. Did he start with zero or did he start with
I don't think he's committed to any of them yet. This was a conversation that just took place like earlier today.
Yeah.
So
I will say, for anyone out there that is considering doing what I and many others have done and binging the Yakuza games. Don't do that. Not because the games aren't great, because they are. But the thing about the Yakuza games is that the characters are incredible, side stories are incredible, stories are good, but what you come to realize after playing like 10 of them is that the stories are by and large the same story.
Okay.
Just like feature new bad guys, not the same story, but it's the same like vibe, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like I don't know. It's not, it's the kind of thing where if you play Yakuza 1, 2, and 3, like, all in a row within, like, a couple months, like I did, you start to realize, oh, like, it's the same story, you know. It's just new actors playing the bad guys that are inevitably going to get, you know, punched into submission or become Kiryu's best friend. It really does kind of feel like watching like a long-running battle shonen like that. Uh-huh. Where I once tried to binge the Cell Saga with my buddies, and not the Kai Cell Saga, but like the original Cell Saga. Yeah. And about like 20 episodes in, we were like, oh man, this is... This is a lot. This is just a lot of fighting and a lot of it's not
really getting anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good note, but you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still haven't played any of the Yakuza games myself either.
You would love them so much.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to do a game backlog. The problem being that like one game is several anime shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. All of them are like, there's so many side quests I hear about and like just ways you can, I don't know, end up in a gambling den or something and just spending all your time in there. So,
you know, the mini games, surprisingly, aren't the things that I spend so much time on.
Yeah.
Mostly because they truly are like just extras. Mm-hmm. Only every now and then do you ever have to engage with them. Outside of every game has like one or two core mini games that are like their own little sub games, like the racing, or the sexy Pokemon girl wrestlers, which makes sense in context, kind of. Okay. But when it comes to like the, I still don't know how to play freaking shogi or what's the tile game? I'm totally blanking.
Oh, Go?
No, with like the lotuses and the.
Oh, Mahjong.
Yeah, I still don't know how to play Mahjong. So
yeah.
I'm safe from those ones.
I don't understand how to play Mahjong either. And I started playing Mahjong like online on a computer, probably in like elementary school or something, because it was just a free game that came with Windows. And I was like, you just match the tiles, right?
No,
that's different Mahjong.
No, that's like, I don't know if they do that in the East either, but my understanding, I feel like that's kind of like Western Mahjong.
Oh, okay.
This Mahjong is like freaky, complicated dominoes poker.
Right, like yeah.
A billion different hand combinations and betting rules and,
yeah,
you know, they're all like, they're all just named after different Chinese characters and numbers. And so, yeah.
How do you learn all of them?
Hard.
I mean, I thought the same thing when I watched Chihaya Furu and they played Karuta. I was like, you just have to know all of these poems.
Yeah, you just have to know them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you speak a language where you have to learn several thousand characters just to read a book, that probably is a little bit easier as far as your schema is concerned.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. We ready to get into Yatagarasu?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought this episode was actually pretty funny outside of all the, you know, murder / death, because we see the return of our prince, only he's taken on an alter ego known as Sumimaru, which I guess is just the name he uses whenever he's pretending to be a servant of the prince and not actually the prince when he goes places.
Because most people don't actually know what he looks like. They've probably never seen him before, which is actually pretty convenient.
Yeah, there's no TV. There's, you know.
Should we go back to that? Should we like make it so that we don't actually know what the president looks like or sounds like so that they can just go amongst the people if need be?
I think most people still knew what the president sounded like because of newspapers, right? Or looked like because of newspapers. Maybe
When photos were invented, sure.
Yeah.
But like, I guess now we'd have to like scramble their faces and voices like they were witness on a 60 Minutes interview or something.
I was going to say prior to that, they probably did like the courthouse sketches for newspapers, and that's how you knew what the president looked like. It was just based on...
That's true.
You know, the little art insert, because they had those art inserts. It does seem very convenient, especially if you decide. He's left someone in his stead, though, too. So I don't think the court knows he's missing, right? Because we saw for a very brief scene in this episode, someone sitting at his desk, wearing his clothes, filling out, like, writing.
Yeah.
We only saw them from the back, so we didn't see their face. You know who it was?
Was it homegirl? Was it his girlfriend?
I bet it was her.
Yeah.
Masquerading as him and doing his busy work while he goes to investigate a drug cartel.
I mean, she disguised herself as just like a random courtier. Like,
yeah.
And you know, they all kind of have, you know, a similar profile. I feel like she could very easily just like from a distance passes as the emperor.
Didn't occur just now that was probably her. So
or maybe as a double we've never heard about, but
it could also be that would have
come up before.
It could also be a double. She's just the only person we didn't Hamayu. We didn't see her, like, yeah. I don't know. We don't know what she's up to.
Can I just say I love that? I know obviously he's doing this because it's a huge threat to his entire kingdom, but yeah. I love that the emperor's into this whole investigation. The thing that makes me feel like the reason he's doing this himself and not sending any of the qualified people that he could is because it's affecting the red light district.
Yeah, I do think that has something to do with it. And I also think
I gotta protect my girls, man. Like, they're coming to me and saying that there's some freaky drug going around, and I gotta put a stop to it.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe he just enjoys like playing Sherlock a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
of course he does.
And like pulling Yukia into it to be his Watson, just by like winning over his family and stuff. I thought all of that was really amusing, but. So
I love that this takes place in Yukia's village. Like, it feels like a different show almost.
Yeah, because we're completely in the court now, and he's just in kind of the countryside, hanging out. So I enjoyed that setup, and then what we see is that people who are using this drug that's being peddled by someone pretending to be a doctor. We do like see the guy who's peddling it. They kind of go rabies sort of. Mm.
They can't untransform from their raven form, and they just kind of go bonkers. It's called the drug is called Sage Cap.
Yeah,
and I was Googling that to see if that was like an old timey euphemism for, I don't know, like opium or something.
Yeah,
and I couldn't find anything, but I'm wondering if that's like an illusion that maybe the readers are supposed to like to be thinking about, or if it's just like a fancy.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if like there's an alternate reading for the kanji or something that might refer to like something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's called Sage Cap. Makes your eyes get really gross and foam out the mouth and just get really violent. But
it does make you feel good for a bit.
It does.
For like two, you get like 2 days of just being like super high.
Yeah.
And then you die horribly. So.
Yes. Yeah. And it also seemed like they capture one of the ravens, the one that was fighting with Yukia, and tie him up, but he manages to off himself somehow with his bindings. Is that what we were supposed to get out of that?
Yeah. I don't know if it was intentional or if it was just, he was thrashing so hard to get out. He like got himself caught.
Yeah.
It was unclear how, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like how sentient he was in bird form.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that there's a lot more bird stuff going on, even in this one episode. Like the whole first, I guess, the first book that got adapted, outside of a couple of key moments, you could totally forget that they were magic bird people a lot of the time. And in this one, you got bird fights, you got permanent freaky bird monster transformation. So again, it feels like a very different kind of story, which I think is cool.
Yeah. There was also a part where they showed one of the horses like in a stable, and you could tell it was trying to free itself. And that wasn't really elaborated on either. I don't know if that's just a little bit of world building or whatever, because of course, why wouldn't you always be trying to escape if you're being forced to stay in your bird form? Yeah. In servitude and like carry these people around all the time and other kinds of stuff. I wonder if that'll get addressed more during this arc or if it's just going to continue to kind of be a background thing, but like free the bird people, please.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I just think it's weird to ride on a guy that you might know, you know, like to treat like,
People giving you piggyback rides, essentially.
Yeah.
Right.
Or like if I was just like riding on a bird and then all of a sudden he like untransforms and it's like my buddy Joe from high school. It's like, yeah. I said some awful stuff about you while I was riding you. I was not being tactful, man.
Yeah. So yeah, abolish the indentured servitude of crow people. It's really messed up that they put like bridles on them and everything. And like,
it's just like,
it's not cool. So they're like making their way through the countryside, kind of taking marks of people who had seen this doctor. But in the meantime, there's a killer monkey. Don't know what he might have to do with. I feel like it introduces a whole bunch of things to this world that I don't have an explanation for, but I'm very curious about. Like, one, like, are there just monkey people in the same way that there are bird people? Two, if there are, is this like a monkey person that's gone feral in the same way that the crow people have gone feral because there's just monkey people? I mean, do the only people that exist in this world, are they just all Yatagarasu? So, I mean...
Yeah, I've been wondering, like, are there other nations that have, like, other magical forms?
Yeah.
Are there other nations where there are just people, like, just regular people that don't transform into anything?
Yeah.
Are there monkey monsters that maybe don't transform into people, but, you know, we are aware as bird people that there are monkey monsters that we got to watch out for?
Yeah.
Or is this, like, a completely unexpected monkey threat?
Is it a science experiment sort of situation, or... You know, there's just a lot of ways.
Maybe the evil doctor made a freaky monkey monster and he's trying to do it again. Like,
yeah.
Maybe he's like, I'm just going to keep giving this drug to people to see if they turn into evil monkeys, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, all we know right now is that there's an evil monkey on the loose and it is just straight up eating people. Kind of implied that it ate a baby in this episode, which was kind of rough. And that was rough. Yeah. Wasn't big on that one. And Yukiya... Well,
strangely, far less graphic than what happens in Elusive Samurai, comparatively, but still.
Yes. Yeah. Right? So, that's basically all that we have on Yatagarasu. We can go ahead and switch over to Elusive Samurai, but last we left our heroes in Yatagarasu, they'll be confronting that monkey. So,
yeah.
We just have to wait another 3 weeks to find out what's up with it. So that's frustrating. But okay. So James, you're reviewing The Elusive Samurai. So why don't you kind of give us an introduction to this world?
Yes. So we are in, I forgot the name of the era. It is 14th century Japan, I do believe. So we are.
I think it's earlier than that, actually.
Maybe like, 13th century.
I think it's 12th.
Oh, is it 12th?
Kamakura. Yeah.
Would that be 12th century?
Like 1140 something to...
Ooh, maybe, yeah. Yeah, that's true. So Kamakura period was 1192 to 1333.
Okay. And Nick is saying this is 1300, so...
So one of the things to know that I didn't know when I was when I watched the first episode of the show, but I picked up on very quickly going back and watching the episodes 2 and 3, just because of the narrator and the way that the show progresses, is that these are all based on historical figures.
Okay.
So all of our characters here are based on real people. Obviously, I don't know how accurate they're trying to be, but like the rough. Like the fall of the Hojo clan, the fact that Tokiyuki is kind of a central figure in the rebound of the Hojo clan against his uncle or the nefarious Ashikaga, Takauji. That's all rooted in like historical fact, right? These are real samurai that were involved in real kind of civil war disputes. And the manga is using their story as kind of a launch pad for its action and its drama. I don't think that Tokiyuki was 8 when he went about going about his bloody revenge.
Yeah, probably not.
I hope not. I don't think he had like a little X-Man squad of superpowered 10-year-olds
that
he did murders with. But at the same time, it is kind of cool. I always think it's really cool to see how, you know, Japanese authors and artists engage with their own history and the way that they, the way that they're digging into it. But long story short, Tokiyuki is our main character. He is the titular elusive samurai, and he is real good at running away from stuff.
Yeah.
Like he can go Speedy Gonzales fast, depending on the gag. Sometimes it seems like he genuinely has like superhuman speed.
Yeah.
And other times he's just really good at dodging and running and jumping. His clan has been killed. His family's been killed. A bunch of his uncles and the vassals and stuff in the clan sold out his brother and his parents and his bride to be and all the other, you know, the life that he had when he was just living as a carefree little lordling. Yeah. And after his whole world is just burnt to a crisp and or beheaded, he runs into Suwa Yorishige, who is the freaky deaky, claims to be a god, has some kind of supernatural foresight.
Yeah.
He says he has visions of the future. Although his visions also include like he is recreated on cloth and with dice, a popular Japanese computer board game from the 80s.
Yeah.
So and he says he got it from a vision, but I don't know. Like a part of me is wondering if this is like a secret isekai or a secret time travel where like he's like some like history buff who played a whole lot of Age of Empires. They got like sucked into the past.
Yeah.
But point being, he is very keen on kind of advancing this narrative and helping him, Tokiyuki get his revenge. And he introduces the squad of super kids that are basically his, the show keeps comparing it to a game. And I'm thinking of like Tokiyuki, he's like the hero unit. And then he has like his little sub-hero units that he can send out to help him win these battles. Cause, I forget their names, but he has Shizuku, Kojiro, Ayako. One of them is like a super strong girl.
Yeah.
Who can, I like her. You know, yeah, she's great. And then there is the kind of clever, priestess that has been, helping Suwa. And then there's, just like the little goblin boy who wants to shit on things. and they're all really adorable. They kill people. I don't know. I just think the show's great. Like it's so beautiful, like so beautiful. And the action is awesome. I think we talked a little bit off mic about the tone is very interesting.
Yeah, because it mixes kind of slapstick sort of, you know, the kind of humor you expect to see in like a Shonen Jump type of anime, but it is like there's also like an undercurrent of misery and violence to it just because of the circumstances of what's happening. So I mean, I think what we talked about off mic is that there's just a lot of beheadings in it specifically, and you talked about how like his family betrayed him, and we see in pretty great detail the uncle betray his younger brother by giving
him his older brother.
Oh, that's his older brother?
Who is only 9, which is what makes this.
Oh, they're very close in age. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, you know, by telling him to his face that, oh, he's going to talk it over and we're going to like get you out of here, only for him to immediately reveal his hiding spot, knowing that it would lead to him being killed. And so,
and we see like that's the crazy thing is I know some people were very understandably kind of turned off in the first episode when it kind of very briefly showed the girl that Tokiyuki was engaged to was assaulted before she was killed. Mm-hmm. And then we see that his brother, like it shows him being beheaded. It's a very wide shot, but we see like
my head fall off. Yeah.
It's uncommonly graphic.
Yeah.
Even compared to like a lot of very intense action anime.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, it will immediately go into like Assassination Classroom style hijinks.
Yeah. Yeah. Like stuff with Sua just being a dork, or like
he uses his little hair braid as like a pull chain for his sunshine face.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Looney Tunes character.
Yeah, he feels like a Looney Tunes character.
He's literally like if Bugs Bunny stepped into the middle of like an Akira Kurosawa film.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah, yeah, it's really strange. You kind of just have to roll with it if you can, you know. The artistry does make up for a lot of it. Cloverworks is doing some pretty interesting things every once in a while, that you'll get like a cut of animation that's just like really dynamic. There was like
impressionistic kind of, even like,
yeah, like there's that brush stroke kind of looking one that looked like it was all done like with a calligraphy paintbrush.
Reminded me, I mentioned it offhand earlier, it reminded me a bit of Devilman Crybaby in some spots.
Yeah, yeah,
like some of that Science Saru just experimental animation that you just, again, you don't normally see that in like a Shonen Jump anime.
Yeah, no, you don't. So that kind of like livens things up visually when they'll do that. I'm interested to see if they'll like continue to kind of do quirky things with the art. But otherwise, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. We're only 3 episodes so far, right?
Yes. Yeah. Episode 4 is this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. So I see PKMNJ fan says, hopefully Cloverworks doesn't drop the ball on this. Yeah, I know that they've kind of got like a reputation that follows them. Is that only because of Wonder Egg Priority, or is there other?
Not necessarily with production, but I mean, I'm pretty sure, didn't Cloverworks work on that one season of anime that we all like to pretend never happened? Other than Wonder Egg Priority? Because I want to say that they might have, yeah, they definitely committed the unspeakable sin of the second season of Promised Neverland.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
I forgot that existed.
As should we all, because yeah. I still contend, I know that's controversial, I think season 1 of Promised Neverland is incredible.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people didn't like the very kind of realistic, grounded tone that it set with its CG backgrounds and stuff. I thought it was incredibly well directed. I've gone back to rewatch some of those episodes. I still think they hold up. Season 2 is probably the single most, like, just on an emotional level of being like a fan watching in real time, one of the most upsetting experiences I've had watching an anime.
Yeah,
like just watching this show that I loved fall to absolute pieces right in front of my eyes.
And that's like, season 2 was supposed to start when things got like really wild.
I know, right?
That's well, and like out.
The manga of Promised Neverland also kind of falls apart a little bit. I'm not going to pretend that they had amazing source material to work with, but the anime skipped the best arc of the manga, basically the last time the manga was great.
Yeah.
And then it just fast forwarded to all the crappy stuff and made it even worse.
Yeah. it devolves into basically like a slideshow, if I recall, right?
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally, it's like one step removed from the ending of Animal House, where it's just like title cards, like, and oh, then where something happened, like whatever, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Oh, that's so, yeah. Hopefully, I mean, I was going to say, thinking of Wonder Egg Priority, this won't have that problem because it's based on a previously existing material, but then you brought up Promised Neverland, which sinks that defense entirely. So
now with Wonder Egg, that really was more a case of just the writing being fundamentally flawed.
Right? Yeah.
Like,
well, they ran into animation production problems too. Like
they did. Stuff got delayed. I mean, that last episode is delayed for forever, but had the script not imploded, I think that show would still have a sterling reputation.
Yeah.
Same with Darling in the Franxx, right? Like, Darling in the Franxx was incredibly well animated and it looked awesome. It just had a really crappy story that devolved into nonsense in the end. So
I watched that entire thing for about
when she became a giant bride spaceship.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What a
shame. I don't even remember the logic behind that. Just that it happened.
There wasn't any. There wasn't. But I mean, Assassination Classroom is great. I haven't seen all of it, but I've seen a lot of it. My anime club, we watched quite a bit of it, and I hear really good things about the manga. I know it's not as popular as other titles, but I hear tell it's very consistent, very entertaining. So
okay, that's good.
Hopefully.
Nick's also pointing out that there's no staff crossover between the Elusive Samurai anime and the Promised Neverland. So
I remember in Promised Neverland when episode credits just straight up stopped having writers involved. Like people something happened beyond simply the source material. Like there was some catastrophe.
The original creators have their names taken off? Was it that there was no writers, or was it that the original creator asked for their names to be taken off the credits?
It might be both.
That feels familiar to me, but
it might be both.
Don't take my word on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Bad situation all around.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Hey, 11235 mentions that this is darker than Assassination Classroom, and it feels more like Neuro, which is a series that I have not thought about in a really hot minute.
I'm not familiar.
I think it had its fans like at its, but I haven't heard anyone mention it in quite a while. I haven't seen it. I just remember the color palette for that. And now that you mention it, the color palette for Neuro, there are some similarities to kind of what you see in Elusive Samurai as well.
I know I can't remember his name, but the color designer that's working on Elusive Samurai has a reputation for very bold, very striking color work. So
yeah, I have the credits open. So it's Kazuko Nakashima. And assuming Kazuko with the ko is female, it is the feminine kanji. Let's see what else they've done. Wonder Egg Priority.
Yeah.
Tracks. Yeah. Fate Grand Order, Absolute Demonic Front Babylonia, Promised Neverland, Darling in the Franxx. It looks like they've done quite a lot. Occultic Nine, but I feel like the colors in Occultic Nine might read more similar to the other science adventure sort of shows, even though that's one's not.
God, that show is so weird. I forgot about
Occultic Nine.
I just had a flashback to it.
I didn't watch all of it. I think I got to the part where, giant spoiler if you haven't seen Occultic Nine, like we find out they're all dead.
Something. I reviewed that whole show. I own both of the Blu-ray sets, and I could not tell you what happened in that show.
Yeah.
I just remember that one poor girl with the ridiculously giant bosom that was just so distracting.
It was very distracting. Yes. Anime is Life from Twitter asks, hey guys, have you read the Tower of God manhwa? I have not.
No.
Be interested to hear your thoughts on season 2. What I've heard is that it is a pretty big step down in quality.
Yeah.
Compared to season 1, just as far as the animation and stuff goes, which is too bad.
I have a buddy that loved season 1, and I asked him if he was keeping up with season 2. He said he watched the first episode and said, nah, I'm good.
I'll just read it instead.
I don't even know if he's still reading it. He went through a phase where he was reading a whole lot of like webtoons and stuff, and I don't know if he is anymore, but I just know that he wouldn't stop talking about Tower of God when it first came out, and now he's like, man, that's whatever.
Yeah. We have extra time, actually, guys, so we can just bullshit with you guys in the chat if you want.
There we can.
Yeah. James, you mentioned talking about Wistoria a little
bit. Yeah, Wand and Sword.
Yeah. That's another one where I feel like the production is downsliding compared to the first episode visually.
I don't think so. Really? I didn't notice anything. I was really impressed with how consistent it was. I mean, maybe like a little in episode 3, but that show just looks freaking gorgeous. There's just so much cool stuff going on. Maybe not as like you might call it like overproduced as some of the dialogue scenes were in the premiere.
Yeah.
But the action continues to be impeccable, and everything has been very on model. The backgrounds are gorgeous. I would say that is an anime where I think with Elusive Samurai, if the direction were strong, even if the animation were a little more limited, I would still be on board with its kind of strange tone and it's
weird
characters. With Vestoria, I think its story is cool. It's doing some interesting things with its kind of One Punch Man take on Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I like that. I think the thing that makes it interesting is the characters treat the fact that he's superhumanly strong almost like a disability. And I mean, in the sense that in the same way that society is often not very accommodating or understanding of people with disabilities, you know, his school, his society just is not built to respect or appreciate the fact that he can swing a giant sword with the power of several dozen grown men.
Yeah.
He can't even open his locker. Like, he can't get into his own locker. So there's like some, I think, very purposeful, like accessibility commentary going on where, you know, he has these gifts, he has these talents, but the educational system that he's in, the social structure that he's in, just does not care or recognize it.
That's an interesting take. I'll go into episode 3 thinking about that. I've only the only episode or last episode I watched was him facing off against that teacher.
Not Snape.
Yeah, but not
exclamation sexy, point, sexy Snape.
Yeah. And finally kind of earning his spot so he'll leave him alone. Just like it was, but all the dialogue around that was interesting, right? Because we had like the two teachers, the one who has been mentoring him and then not Snape. And then we have the older lady who's like the principal, if I recall. Yeah. Kind of weighing in.
Or whatever, she's, you know, the administrator, the head lady.
Yeah, kind of weighing in on why his differences have value, but also, but she doesn't want him to attempt to go to the tower. She wants him to basically become this amazing scholar who can, you know, share his gift that way. And it was just, yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know if I'm fully on board with like how obsessed Will seems to be with his childhood friend. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, you just, you know. Yeah. And Nick brings up a good point in the chat. And I talked about this in my review where there's the allegory that I think either intentionally or otherwise it's getting at. And like Will's characterization, like you said, with his being super obsessed of being the whatever it's called, one of the Avengers like wizards.
Sages or something. Yeah.
It gets really tricky when you get into the realm of magic, because that's when you go into like, on the one hand, you know, if we're talking about commentary for like, you know, strengths or weaknesses, quote, you know, heavy quotes that you're born with, that then kind of determine your path in society. It gets tricky when those things are like literal superpowers that are like demonstrably rooted in like your innate, whatever, your alignment, your affinity. Like it's one thing for someone to not be as physically gifted or to, you know, be limited in their mobility or to have, you know, disadvantages or, you know, developmental issues in their reading or whatever, where those are things that you can generally, you know, overcome or find ways around with technology and with all sorts of other things. But like in a world where some people have the ability to like blow things up basically with their mind or to freeze things or whatever, and the fact that like Will just can't do that, that sort of becomes this kind of strange, like, for him to say, I'm going to become a Grandia, like a, you know, I'm going to become a super wizard that can't do magic.
Yeah. So,
well, on the one hand, it's kind of interesting if you're asking questions like, is he going to have to change how his society values power? Is he going to have to change, you know, in the same way that like a lot of people with like learning disabilities and developmental disabilities have to, you know, jump over 10,000 hurdles just to prove that they can, you know, they can own businesses, they can be successful artists and performers and athletes, you know, just like anyone else. That's kind of cool. And that's, I think, an interesting take. But also, it would be weird if I was living in Harry Potter world or this world. Yeah. And I said, I'm going to be a master of magic. I can't magic.
Yeah.
I'm still going to be a magic guy. You're going to let me into your magic club.
Yeah.
Even though the ability to do magic is kind of critical. Now, if he became like, you know, if they said, hey, it turns out that really all we care about is your ability to kill monsters. So you can become the Grandia of big ass swords.
Yeah.
Then that would, you know, it's one of those things where if you think really hard about the logic of it, I don't know how well it holds up.
Yeah. But you can still get like the analogy there.
Yeah.
For sure. And it does make it maybe more interesting to look at it from that lens than the purely surface level one. But even
it
if
is
you're
weird
only
that he likes this girl so much that he barely knows, though. You are right about that.
That is,
or not barely knows, but that we barely see.
Like, right. And she seems like she's doing pretty okay without him. So,
in episode, I think it's episode 3. They all blur together when I have to watch them all at once. But there is like that scene where it shows the council of Avengers wizards. And she's just chilling with them, you know?
Yeah.
And she has that moment where she's like, I'm waiting for you to join me, Will. It's like, but what? You could go see him, couldn't you? Like,
yeah. Do they not let you out? Like, even
I know they do, because there's like a whole little thing where she goes on like a tour or something.
Okay.
So maybe she's busy. I don't know.
And I think they also mentioned earlier, like the only reason they let Will into the school at all is because it was to get her to join. Yeah. So.
And then she graduated like instantly or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's just been stuck there. He's like a super super senior.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
He needs to pay more attention to homegirl that's been, you know, standing by him.
She seems nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's funny, right?
Yeah. Sticks up for him.
She gets real thirsty at the thought of him getting beaten up by his teacher, which is, you know.
That was something else. Yeah.
I was like, oh, you're a freak. That's cool. Good for you. Good for you, girl. Like,
yeah.
We got enough boy freaks in this industry, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always good to have a ridiculously crazy horned dog girl. Like,
it's like, I don't want anyone to step on me. I want to watch you get stepped on, apparently. Yeah.
Well, as someone who once dated a certifiable Potterhead that consumed a voracious amount of sexy fan fiction, I feel like it's still in keeping with the vibe.
Oh, I need to interview the light novel author for this now, just so that I can ask them, like, so how many Harry Potter fan fictions have you read?
Yeah.
And what was the most common ship?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I feel like the fact that the Snape in this one is just a sexy brooding bad boy.
Yeah.
Again, I'm familiar with the type that absolutely was.
I wonder who did Gennarabucci create Waver in his adult form, because his adult form is very Snape-like as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Do we credit that to Urobuchi, or was that who? Now I have to know. Now I have to go to like Fate Zero, and I got to get into the spider web of the encyclopedia related to the Fate franchise.
I feel like the designs are probably what's his butt. Not Ryukushi. That's for him. That's Higurashi guy.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Wait, was this written by the same person who did Dororo? No.
I don't think so.
Grand Order Phase 10. Lord Elmaloy's Case Files Rail Zeppelin Grace Note. Why are these like this? Okay, so these
I've learned that the Type Moon Averse is just a treasure trove of insanity.
Yeah. Who's credited for original? Original creator is Makoto Sanda, who also wrote Rental Magica, and was also part of the D&D group with Gen Urobuchi that gave us Chaos Dragon. He was the Hell DM.
Yeah. Hell yeah! I wonder how many anime fans know how much they owe to Dungeons and Dragons.
So much.
Like, how much Dungeons and Dragons has just shaped this whole freaking industry.
So much.
Like, what is it? Is it Lodoss War? It's just literally
it's a different tabletop game, but it's essentially Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll need to ask Makoto Sanda, I guess, is who we may credit with the design for Adult Waver, which is just Snape.
I'm just saying, what is it? Vox Machina and stuff? Like, the shows get all this credit for, like, oh, they brought D&D into, like, the mainstream. And it's like, let's not get too hasty here.
Yeah. No,
we've been making D&D cartoons for decades. They just haven't been speaking English for the most
part. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What was another one we wanted to kind of touch on, since neither of these were that beefy this week? Are you keeping up with Senpai is an Otonoko?
No, honestly, the only shows I have watched are the ones I'm reviewing, and also Yatagarasu.
Yeah.
So I'm caught up on Nier, and I'm caught up on Quality Assurance.
Okay, yeah. I am also caught up on Quality Assurance. I hope they recover, because...
Oh, yeah, the three-episode rule wasn't even... It was the one-episode rule.
Yeah, yeah, it got me all in on the one episode. Loved the artistry. We talked it up quite a lot during our last podcast. And then second episode, third episode, the just general animation quality as far as just the character drawing, like...
Fell off a
cliff. Off model. Yeah, just fallen off. And they did the twist in episode 3. That's the one where we find out that the reason Nicola is still alive is because there's various AIs within the game that control various things. And one of them has taken over Nicola because they want Haga to accomplish some things.
Very, very cleverly named Tesla. Yeah.
God damn it.
Now, I will say... The video game, the inside baseball, like QA testing jokes, are very funny.
Yes,
like the way that he grinds his body against the wall of the town walls for like an entire day. That's very funny.
Yeah, that was very funny.
That is what you do when you test the textures and the barriers in games. You just have to go like, make sure you don't fall off the map.
Yeah. And then we see like his former companions have bugged out by messing with things too much in like debug mode. So one of them is frozen inside of a floor, you know, just like ass up.
I don't know how that happened either.
It looked like his butt was exposed too, which makes me think somebody thought it was funny.
Was he taking a dump and he like fell through the ground or like what happened?
I don't know if you would fall that way. Would you fall forward, ass up, or would you fall back flat if that happened?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So there's that, and then his other friend who is like in a death loop, which is terrifying because they were invisible when they fell to their death, and so they keep reviving and then redying, and they've been stuck that way for like over a year.
Yeah.
So
one of his friends just fell into the sky and never came back. And it's just a shame because that's one of those things where like for like the Deathloop girl, if that was animated in a more visceral way where you could like tell that, you know, there's like maybe a flash of awareness.
Yeah. Your eyes or something. Yeah.
But the way it's depicted, it, she's just kind of like blinking and conceptually it's like, oh crap. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
But then the execution is like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess that's not good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried that this is going to be one of those shows that I like in spite of itself rather than the really, honestly, I thought, like you said, great first episode. But, yeah, that's what happens with the preview guide is sometimes you get tricked.
Yeah.
For lack of a, not tricked, but sometimes you get your hopes up along with the production team only to realize, as I'm sure they do in real time, that, this is maybe more than we could handle.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Hopefully they're doing okay.
Yeah. Hitachi Cordoba points out that Dead Demon Dedede is their new heavenly delusion. I really want us to talk about that show.
Next I know. Week. I am 100% committed to catching up on that because...
Yeah.
I've been hearing so many cool things, and if it wasn't for that crazy conference I was at all week, I would have been able to. But
yeah, I haven't touched it yet either, and you guys can expect a new backlog tomorrow. So I got a movie that I should have watched a million years ago that I'm going to watch tonight, probably to write that up tomorrow. No, but
I don't want to know what it is. I'm so
curious. You guys want to know what it is? I'm going to watch Millennium Actress because I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Satoshi Kon. So, yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I've never seen the whole thing either. I watched part of it when I was a kid. I know for a fact I didn't watch the whole thing because the DVD I got from the library was all scratched up.
Oh, damn.
So, and I have not finished it, and I need to do that. So,
yeah, my Satoshi Kon, what I have seen is Perfect Blue, of course.
Classic.
And then Paprika, classic, of course. And then all of Paranoia Agent.
Classic.
But nothing else. So I also
there's not that much more, right? There's Millennium Actress and there's
Tokyo Godfathers. Mm-hmm.
And that's it, right? I mean, that's pretty much it. He had a very...
That guy did not get to make enough stuff.
No.
Yeah.
Stupid pancreatic cancer.
Stupid. Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in on this special Thursday edition of the ANN After Show. We will be back next week on Tuesday per usual. And then I will be at Otakon. If I'm feeling up to it, we may do the Tuesday after that. But if I'm not, you know, don't hold it against me, okay? So.
Oh, actually, I won't be available.
Oh, right. Because you're going somewhere.
I'm going to go see Wicked.
Yeah.
The play, not the film. That's not out.
Right. Yeah. You have to tell me how amazing it was. When you see it, I've only read the book. I have not actually ever seen the play. So
very excited.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you guys. So I did say we would be here next week. Yes. We'll see you guys next week on Tuesday.
Yes.
Until then, have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye.